Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Walter, the host. And True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is and has always been your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Always actively involved and engaged in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, including rare coins, collections, estates. We deal in scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds as well. We do a lot of wealth and capital preservation. We consider ourselves specialists at helping you build portfolios to preserve your wealth in a sound, conservative, financial way, biblical as well, just a long-term thing. I was talking to someone yesterday, and you've heard me say it before, but it's simple. The items that are biblically attributed as true wealth, you go through the Bible, the only things that God says in the Bible are true wealth, solid assets, firm hard assets, and they're basically precious metals. And there's items, there's mention of coins throughout. You know, there's sectors, okay? And I want to bounce around. It's, you know, it's like precious metals, livestock, real estate. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine last night who's a phenomenal architect. They've been rated top 10 by Architectural Digest in the nation for eons, for many years. And what came to my mind was I was talking to him. You know, he's done incredibly well over the years, and he's got plenty of metals and coins, and he also invests in real estate. They have apartment complexes and things like this as well, believe it or not, as a plane. Not a problem I would ever know about. But the point is, I was thinking, you know, interesting. He's in architecture, and the way I look at it is God says gold and silver-based products, you know, precious metals, what comes out of the earth, precious stuff out of the earth is the way to look at it. Because at the end, it goes gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones. Well, precious stones, gold and silver, all that stuff, it comes out of the earth. There is a limited quantity of it. It was created by whatever miracle God created it. I mean, yesterday, I was looking at this incredible gold nugget we have that it's little, but and some yin-yang had mounted it to a pin at one point, so it's got a little solder mark on the back. But the gold had grown into perfectly shaped pyramids, pyramid-shaped crystals. Unbelievable. Just, you know, I just stare at that, and I'm like, how, Lord? You know, how does this happen? The earth is magnificent. The overall time of creation, folks, I do not buy into the 6,000-year-old earth theory. There is nothing in the Bible that tells you that. Why do you suppose in the first beginning of Genesis, he says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then he says, now, the earth was tohu and bohu, without form and void, destroyed, devastated, wiped out. You know, and he says that darkness was among, you know, everything. There was something covering the earth. We don't know. But the point is, the earth has been here for a period of time. Time to us, you know, when we get into a 6,000-year-old earth theory, it's frankly idiotic, because we don't realize, unless you're a physicist or a real astrophysical scientist, you don't realize when you say something like that on a universal basis how foolish it is. Time that we use is measured by our solar system, by our earth. Okay, we're in a solar system of approximately 10 planets. You know, I know the whole up-down on that. But our time is measured by how long it takes us to, you know, revolve around the sun and how many revolutions the Earth makes while it's in orbit. And if you don't think that's changed over time, or you don't think, you know, if God creates things the way he has, when he says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the, you know, the earth was without form and void. And then we have the great flood. You know, what crashed into the earth? Was our trajectory changed? Was the axis tilt changed? Was the rotational aspect changed? You know, we don't know, you know, and when did it capture the moon and how? And, you know, there's just, you get it, it just doesn't make sense, okay? And I'm not, trust me, I'm no evolutionist, but I do believe that God is so much bigger than our minds. And we've got to realize, just as an insect, the most primate insect, just as his thought compares to our thought, technically God's far beyond that over us. I mean, obviously he is. You know, it's more like if you compare the thoughts of an amoeba, you know, the thought capability of an amoeba or a one-celled organism maybe to us, that may be the distance God is from us. He's so far over us. He's everything. He's everywhere. He's, you know, he's all. I mean, he is all. He's omnipotent, omniscient. That means every one of the 8 billion people on earth, he knows exactly what they're thinking, exactly what they're doing. He knows, you know, the intertwinings of all of us. He knows the gal that gets up today that's going to get struck by a car this afternoon at 3:30 p.m. because she's late for, you know, dropping her daughter off to an appointment, and, you know, the doctor's appointment she had gets delayed 7 minutes. And, you know, he's got all these people's lives intertwining. It's beyond our even comprehension. So we want to simplistically put God into our box. And people get mad when you try to propose the concept that you can't. Pre-trib rapture is another one. There's a couple of scriptures that describe a rapture, and people go crazy with this pre-trib stuff. I mean, when someone has to explain a scripture to you while they're yelling with 30 minutes of, you know, esoteric breakdown or exegesical breakdown of this, that, and the other, it's not a simple scriptural concept. You know, you look at John Wesley, who said, if you want to know what the Bible says, you give it to 10 regular men, laymen. Have them read it. They'll tell you what it means, and that's what it means. God did not, you know, want to fool us or trick us. Now, does he hide mysteries? Absolutely. It says it's God's nature to hide a thing and man's nature to find it out. Solomon wrote, a king's nature to find it out, because he was talking to his foolish son, Rehoboam, who would later destroy Israel and himself. But the point was, when Solomon says a king, he's talking to his son, saying, look, prince, you're going to be a king someday. You're a fool, and this is how kings behave. So it still applies to all of us. It's man's nature to find something out. So God somehow created this earth, and it is magnificent. If you could spend your life going around looking at the majestic beauty and the concept. I mean, I love to go on Google Earth and just stare. I just am blown away. I mean, I love, you know, I was looking the other day at the South Pacific. I love Tahiti. I've been there a number of times, and, you know, my wife and I love to chase beaches. I guess we travel tropically. That's our thing. I just went to St. Lucia to a place called Jade Mountain. It was pretty interesting. But we travel all over the world, and we look for beaches. I've, of course, been to Israel and a bunch of other stuff, too. But my favorite is Tahiti. We've been there a number of times. Once you're in the South Pacific beaches, there's nothing like it in the world. It's absolute paradise. Going there makes me think, if, you know, I can't even imagine what heaven's like, because it is unbelievable. It's mystical. But I was looking at Google Earth, and ironically, there's all these cracks under the ocean that the satellites pick up, and they all point right to the French Polynesia, to those islands. I don't know why. It looks like a marble that got smacked. It's where the volcanoes came up, but at the same time, it's just ironic that all those cracks lead to one point clear across the Pacific. It's like a clock or something. But to look at, and you can see the tectonic plate shifting when you look at Google Earth. You can see where the plates have moved. I mean, it's magnificent. People don't realize the power of water. I mean, even on a small scale, you know, this was a tough winter for wet snow, and we had some water leaks in our house, and a good friend of mine who's an incredible contractor who built his own house, he had it, and I know a number of people that dealt with it this year. And the thing we were discussing is, people don't realize how destructive water is. Small quantities of it can destroy big things. When you get to the quantity of the great flood, you just can't even comprehend, folks, of massive quantities of water just destroying the earth, moving in mass. you know, with thousands of feet deep, just, you know, moving at high velocity, carrying everything with it, churning, turning, coming up from under the earth, coming down from what I believe is a firmament above, crashing to the earth, and just, you know, the grand, Noah's Ark, in a book they refer to as the Book of Jasher, which I don't know. It's probably not the real Book of Jasher, but the Book of Jasher is referred to three times in the Old Testament. But in that book, which is, a lot of these books go back to like 1500 BC, and whether they're the right or not, I don't know. But the point was that it was written in, well, the first known copy of it was 1500 BC. So whoever was reading it back then knew it was scripturally consistent. And it discusses Noah's journey on the ark and how absolutely miserable it was and how that ark was being thrown around like a twig in a, you know, in the surf of the ocean. I mean, it was just being pounded and upside down and sideways. And it describes in there that every animal's feces was everywhere. Animals, you know, in vomit, and just the most terrible thing. And it got to the point where Noah said, "Take us, Lord. We're ready to die. This is ridiculous. It's horrible." I mean, if you've ever had slight seasickness, I can't imagine. I call it slight because if you're on 10-foot swells in the ocean, you get sick. I've been on 20-foot swells one time, and it knocked out all the electronics in the boat. There was years we lived in Oregon. I was on the water a lot too much, and I've also been up to Alaska. And one time got caught in a horrible storm, and a boat ride that should have taken 25 minutes back to land took us 4.5 hours of just brutality. And that's absolutely minuscule, undetectable by any measurement. And yet the great flood would be, it's just, you can't even imagine. So when you look at the earth and the changes that would have taken place and it's insurmountable. It's incomprehensible what could have taken place there. And so back to what I was saying, the way God describes assets, gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones, those are the only thing you can safely park your financial world in and know you're going to do okay. And I was talking about, like, I was speaking with my architect, and I've talked about on the show before, these are sectors, okay? It doesn't mean, he says, real estate, it just, oh, you go out and buy a raw piece of land. As a matter of fact, unless it's waterfront, buying raw land is not always a very smart bet. But my point is this, he's an architect. He makes his money off real estate. He makes his money off designing and helping people develop real estate. I've mentioned in the past, somebody who, you know, builds or drills oil, they're making money off real estate. They're also kind of making money off the precious products that the earth produces. And so they're overall sectors. So when you get into the gold and silver sector, that entire sector includes coins, precious metals. It's an entire sector. In fact, the majority of the sector, the biggest money in the sector, really trades in the form of coins. Coins have been around as long as man has, and they collectability has been around as long as man has. There's people that say, you know, people ask, how do they know this, and how do they know it's going to hold value and all this? God made us a certain way. God caused us to desire riches and wealth and valuables. And we need to resist the urge to love money. We need to resist the urge to covet other people's things. We need to, you know, resist the urge to, you know, chase money, etc. But in Proverbs, he makes it very clear that one of the benefits of true wisdom is riches, honor, and life. We will accumulate wisely if we're wise. We'll save, we'll balance our budget, we won't borrow excessive money foolishly, and over time, we will build and build and build our little empire, one brick at a time, 1 ounce of silver at a time. We've got people that come in every week or two and say, "I'll take a half a dozen silver rounds, please, you know, $100 worth every now and then." Well, over time, $100 becomes $1,000, and $1,000 becomes $5,000, and $5,000 becomes $10,000. I've seen it time and time again. Men that are on measly, meager wages, they save well. Or I should say, if they save, it accumulates well. So please understand, saving is wise. Protecting and preserving your capital, wise. Being greedy, jumping into the stock market for all the wrong reasons, you have to ask yourself, what is your true motive in saving or investing money? What your true motive should be is to maintain spending power at or above the rate of inflation, period, okay? You do not buy anything to get rich quick. You don't go buy, you know, IPO stocks in Snapchat that has absolutely no revenue, no price-to-earnings ratio, nothing. There's stocks out there, and you'll say, well, yeah, but some of these have done okay. Sure they have. There's always, you know, everything's possible. But Wall Street is a casino market. You've got to realize that. And I've discussed, you know, the artificial index of the Dow that they remove and replace stocks. That actually applies to every major index, S&P 500, NASDAQ. All of it is a rotating index. In other words, the S&P 500 stocks today are not the same as they were 6 months ago. They're the top 500 performing stocks in the Standard & Poor's lineup. It's just the way it is. I mean, so you don't use those indexes as an indication of what the market is doing. You'll be trapped. The point is they want to lure you in. Obama, back in April of 13, met with all the central bankers, all the CEOs of central banks globally, and began a very concerted, organized manipulation of the metals. Two by two, they would buy extraordinary amounts of futures contracts to literally pound the metals down. They began to lower interest rates. They began to create false information about the stock market. We began to see the stock market stabilize, but nothing overly impressive, no phenomenally ridiculous gains. The dot-com craze of the 90s, everyone who's in that market wants that back. Folks, that only lasted a couple years, and then it was headed off by 9/11, which it had to be. What had happened was we had transitioned from stocks and bonds being a provider of dividends and a place to park your money, kind of helping a business as venture capital and just reaping a little bit of reward. The dot-com craze taught us to expect big returns and big gains out of these companies. Corporate structure does not work that way. I was just meeting yesterday with the guy who owns a very substantial chunk of Sprint. And he was talking about some of these competitive companies that are out there on a smaller level selling different, you know, factions of the phone business. You know, some have prepaid and some have this and that, and I'm not into it, but I don't know. And he was talking about some of these companies like Metro PCS, which is just growing like a weed. They are prepaid phones, but the thing was they were going to merge. I think T-Mobile and AT&T were going to merge, and the FCC shut it down. And part of the agreement was, as if the FCC shut it down, AT&T had to write a $4 billion check to T-Mobile. So T-Mobile's dumping all this money into Metro PCS, and they're popping up on every single street corner. So people look at that and go, wow, they're growing like a weed. One thing I learned in banking, hypergrowth, excessive forced growth, is always 100% of the time the ingredient of a future business failure. Every single time, no exceptions, bar none. So when you see that kind of growth, you know it's not a good thing. This is what happens in the stock market as well. Everybody piles their money in, more people pile on top of it. And then, as Warren Buffett said long ago, he said, when I find out that single mothers on welfare are buying stocks, I'm out. And he did get out before the big dump. The dot-com craze was a two-year fantasy. It was a two-year frenzy. It was a casino market. It was headed off. It was ended, concluded by 9/11. 9/11, folks, I know there's all kinds of people that criticize if you say there was a whole bunch of conspiracy surrounding it. I've done extensively deep research, as deep as I can go, and there's absolutely no question in my mind. World Trade Center building number 7 went down, I don't remember, 8 or 9 hours later after the collapse of the other towers, you know, with no reason. It did not get injured or get, it didn't sustain damage from the attacks. But what was uniquely in that building was all of the evidence that the IRS was using to research, collusion and cooked books. In other words, the Enron phenomenon. Enron had been busted. Enron was like Fortune One, the biggest company in the world, and it was all a Ponzi scheme. It was all a lie. And then they began to realize this was happening all over Wall Street. They did not release that information publicly because it would have been the end, the demise of America. So they were doing some deep research. They were starting to accumulate documents and get all the information, and they were on to something. So you had, you know, Wall Street's right there, the financial district of the world right there. I don't, you know, I can spend time on it, but I won't. But the first two towers go down. Building 7 goes down later. Rudy Giuliani's walking out, and he says, we're getting out of there. They're pulling the building, which means exploding it. Later on, they asked him what he meant. He said, oh, I meant they're pulling people out of the building. Folks, they were pulling the building. They pulled it. Every one of those buildings was a textbook demolition. You know, absolutely textbook. You show it to any demolitions expert, and I mean any, and I've seen movies where they have. There's no question. You can see the squibs and everything else. You know, I believe that they knew, you know, that they were preparing. The people for a new American century were behind it. They found some foolish terrorists that they could artificially convince that they were doing jihad. They were just a pawn. You look at the underbelly of the planes going into the building. They're absolutely, unquestionably not passenger jets. You can see the building ignite before the plane hits, which means there was some kind of radio control on it. And the amount of gas inside of one of those planes would never take down a building of that caliber. I mean, the I-beam structure, there's 272 vertical I-beams in that building that were basically 4 by 5 feet. You know, you just, those things shred planes. Planes are made out of very thin, cheap aluminum. They're not, you know, they're not made out of hard substance. So anyway, the point is that that's what ended and ended the dot-com craze officially, put it to rest so that no one could ever dig it back out. And now they're trying to resurrect this beast, and it isn't going to happen. Today we had an interest rate hike from the Fed of 0.25%. Metals jumped a couple percent, you know, 2-3%, which is expected. But we're heading into that new era. We're heading into an era of forced inflation by the Fed. They've dropped rates so low, folks, we were down to what's called true zero, where they couldn't go any lower. And now I'm telling you, we're going the other direction. It's going to start putting such extraordinary amounts of pressure on America. Our consumer debt alone, folks, is $4.1 trillion. Actually, that was as of 2014. I suspect at the rate it's been growing, it is probably closer to $4.5 trillion now. And you, if you think of, you know, just the significance of, you know, 0.25% interest rate hike, you know, on something like that, it's, you know, alone, it's, you're talking, I'm doing the little math here, that alone is, I can't even get the number up here, it's like 112, no, it'd be more than that. I won't even get it. I'd have to calculate it later. It's probably $250 billion or $25 billion a year or whatever. It's a lot. Sorry, I didn't have that number ready. It's unbelievable. There's been one rate hike. This is a second. There's more coming. What happens is when you start to spread this rate hike across America, it's going to affect every household at some level. It's going to affect our nation at a level. It's a fact. We are in debt. Debt is so bad and so wrong and so destructive, and no country has ever even dreamed of debt like we have. No country in the history of the world. As a matter of fact, I would say that all the countries combined debt in history doesn't add up to our debt. And it's so wrong. I'm sorry to keep repeating that, but it is our demise. We have currently a $20 trillion deficit. Okay, that is $67,000. I've done this math before. I'll do it again real quick. Our deficit is $20 trillion. Okay, our unfunded liabilities are eight times that, about $160 trillion. The $20 trillion in deficit is $67,000 for every man, woman, and child, okay? You got to realize children, they don't pay taxes. Retired people in general, they don't pay taxes. The figure that I've heard everything from 16 to 23% of Americans pay taxes. I'm going to go with the high figure. I'm going to say 23% of Americans pay taxes. Let's just say one out of five are actual tax-paying citizens. If our deficit, and that our deficit is just flat money owed, there's no hiding from it, okay? Every stinking penny we make with the Fed turns out as debt. It's just a terribly destructive system designed specifically to confiscate your wealth and my wealth and inflation and hide it from us in order to force us into a state of socialism. It transfers wealth to the governments, and it supposedly transfers wealth to a select group of elitist bankers, which not supposedly it does. There's just no way out. That number of $20 trillion is $67,000 for every man, woman, and child. If one out of five citizens pays taxes, that means one out of five citizens is responsible for the deficit. So that brings the number from, instead of 300 million Americans, that brings it down to the responsibility of 60 million Americans. If you take $20 trillion in deficit divided by 60 million Americans that owe it, you end up at about $335,000 or $38,000. I think it's closer to $340,000 for every taxpaying citizen. $340,000 in debt that they owe on the deficit. Now, our unfunded liabilities, you take that another step. The unfunded liabilities are, you know, it's everything. It's basically all of our debts. It's, you know, our credits, it's student loan debt, mortgage debt, personal debt, credit card debt, you know, our Social Security debt, Medicare debt, everything. Okay, this number becomes approximately eight times the deficit, $160 trillion plus. So you take eight times that $340,000. So in other words, the unfunded liabilities is money that we have to pay out over time. I hope you understand what I'm saying. It's about a 20-year owed debt, okay? So that's about eight times. So that gives each tax-paying citizen $2.7 million in debt on our unfunded liabilities that has to be paid back over time. $2.7 million for every wage earner. It's a simple equation. It's a simple fact. There's no other math like it. Okay, there's no way to refute it. All these things I talk about, folks, are not opinion. They're fact. So if you work and you pay taxes, you owe $2.7 million in unfunded liabilities. That means Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, blah, blah, blah. or $340,000 in just instant deficit debt, $2.7 million. Simple moral of this story is this. It is never going to get paid off. There are only two solutions to this story. One is hyperinflation. And how do we hyperinflate? The way we hyperinflate is we create money like it's going out of style. And we tell people that the dollar's strong because we're comparing it to other world currencies. The thing we don't explain to people is these other world currencies are tied to the dollar. It's just a big revolving foolish cycle, okay? The other way out is bankruptcy. Well, America at this point isn't discussing bankruptcy, so I don't see that coming in our future. Hyperinflation is on the way. They're doing it now by creating extraordinary amounts of debt. Unfortunately, Donald Trump is following in the footsteps of adding to the deficit at a pace that is concerning. He's got a $1 trillion infrastructure program, which is cool. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's cool, but it's we don't have the money, but it's cool. You know, I mean, and I'm going to tell you, he's already got stuff out there that's going to add to the deficit by $5.3 trillion, okay? So he's not helping. If you have faith in him on that, he's not helping. He's a corporate numbers man. He takes what he's given, and he goes to work, okay? He's not, apparently not questioning the entire system and not looking to break it apart. That could change over time. He may get wiser. He may have people around him that wake him up, the Steve Bannons of the world. We don't know. But what we know now is he's looking at huge programs with Trump Care and, you know, growing the defense budget and doing a $1 trillion infrastructure spending. Now, the thing with infrastructure, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say this. We are in an era where the government spends money like wildfire. I don't know if, you know, it's wrong, we need to stop, but it doesn't seem to be wanting to stop. Here's the problem. Barack Hussein Obama was sending $1 trillion a year overseas. $1 trillion overseas. Trump says, heck with that. Let's make America great again. He says, who cares about sub-Saharan Africa? I mean, and then the radical left says, oh, but you need to care about these people. What about our people? We send $1 trillion overseas under Obama every year. You know, and that alone, you're back to the numbers I was crunching. $1 trillion a year is $3,300 for every man, woman, and child. So that means if you have a family of four, they're sending over $13,000 a year overseas to Sudan and sub-Saharan Africa and Pakistan and Malaysia and Egypt and Yemen. And Obama transitioned it all to terribly radical Muslim countries. So $13,000 a year per family of four getting shipped overseas. Now, that sucks. But the truth of it is now Trump's saying he's going to keep the spending program going. He's going to do it at home and he's going to build some stuff. I mean, and I think the man can build. When we look back at what FDR did during the Great Depression, tough situation, but, you know, could have been handled a different way. The problem is by the time he got his hands on it, there was no way out other than to hyper explode currency because the Fed caused the problem in the first place. And hyperinflation was the only way to cover it up temporarily. But at least we got bridges and beautiful federal buildings and dams and national parks and railroads. And, you know, we got some infrastructure. Trump, like Trump saying, you go into our airports in some of these cities and it's appalling. They're run down old garbage dumps. And I've been to them. They're terrible. So he's saying we need to raise the bar. We need to look better. We got to get some infrastructure built that's phenomenal. I can't disagree with the man. But the method of debt spending is, you know, we're on a runaway train, folks. It's like, all right, you're bankrupt. You know you are. I'm telling you today, when people say we need to cut the deficit, we need to do that, I can't even imagine a system that would do that, because what would happen is we would all absolutely have to go into the dark ages of absolutely giving up so many things for generations to even get ahead. It'd be foolish in a way. We might as well, we're already there, right? You might as well grin and bear it, I guess. I don't know. But I'm telling you, one very sad result of this system that we are in is that your money is being consumed by inflation at a pace you can't even fathom. And they hide it from you. There is a reason why precious metals have gone up 300 to 400% in the last, 15 years. Granted, people go, well, gold's down. You know, gold was 1900. Now it's only 12 and change. It's not down. It was up real high. It'll go back. Silver was crazy high. You know, they actually pulled the lid off and let it go a while. And they were like, man, this stuff's crazy. We got to regulate it. We got to manipulate it back down because everybody's jumping ship on the stock market. And we know that Obama's best interests are nowhere near doing things in a constitutional manner. So he manipulated it down. So you really need to get your finances into what God says will preserve and protect. And that's where I started out. Gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones. Gold and silver, precious stones come out of the earth. Livestock, it's life. It lives on the earth. Real estate, part of the earth. Human life, God's creation. We're the only things that can create wealth. Now, if you own a business, you hire people, you delegate, they create wealth, that's good. But not all of us own a business. So what we do is we need to put our money into those biblically sound assets that we can park. Not only that, the other things that precious metals-based assets give us, or a portfolio gives us, is a hard asset that's liquid, it's transportable, it's immediately recognized globally. If you think that you have U.S. coins and you go to Dubai or the Middle East and no one's going to know what it is, you're foolish. But if you know, the only way that could happen, I mean, we've got the internet, we've got public knowledge at a, you know, the information age, as we call it, as the book of Daniel said, at the time when knowledge shall increase and people shall travel to and fro. Basically saying, you know, people are going to be going all over the world. They're commuting everywhere. And then we've got the internet and telecommuting, and the information is universal everywhere now. We're getting into a standardized global setting. Unfortunately, that's all being built on the wrong form of religion. It's being built on the wrong set of morals. It doesn't like to acknowledge the superiority of certain cultures over others. The fact that our system in American justice and democracy has had an incredibly positive effect on all these other nations. We are adopting or accepting many of these heinous nations as if they're, you know, on a moral parallel, a moral equivalent with the United States of America. You get this Yahoo who makes this movie and wins whatever it was, an Oscar or Grammy or whatever. I'm sorry, I'm not into that too much. And the movie's called Moonlight, and it's about two black kids that grew up together, had a homosexual relationship. One moved away, fantasized about how much he loved his homosexual lover, came back to his town 10 years later, only to find out that that other kid had moved on with his life and become normal. And then it's about this terrible, you know, dilemma that this kid went through, and then he had to revisit all of his youth problems and all this stuff. So this movie, which won the almighty Grammy or Oscar, the whatever award that was made by an Iranian gentleman. That Iranian gentleman, which, you know, first of all, we should realize, or he should realize, that just America alone giving him the opportunity is a great thing. I think it might have got, I don't know what it got. I'm looking it up here. I'm seeing Golden Globe Award, maybe. I don't know. Moonlight Best Picture, blah, blah, blah. I should know this, and I'm sorry I don't. Boy, they make it hard to find, don't they? Okay, so I'm going to leave that behind. But the point is, this guy refuses to speak at this award ceremony, and he has someone read a letter in his place, and he proceeds to bash on America for this ban on immigrants and all this garbage, to attack Trump when he's from flipping Iran. Iran has their big day every year where they drag everybody into a huge public center. I've seen it on video. You want to see a sad thing and understand Islam? They bring all these criminals in. They hang them from cranes by the dozens. They have people by the dozens tied to posts, being flogged, being whipped. They have dozens of people buried in the ground, being stoned to death. They have certain punishments where they get a big circle of people and they let someone try to run and get away and they beat them and beat them and beat them. They have stuff where they hang people by their feet and upside down and they beat them and beat them and beat them. This is all in one day to purge the sins of their society. Now, as Christians, we think homosexuality is wrong. But as Americans and Christians, we believe people have a right to do whatever they want to do. So just because something's morally and ethically wrong, it's not our responsibility to legislate morality. That's the problem with legislating morality. When people get in their mind and they say, gosh, you know, we should take all these Christian precepts and make them laws. The problem is, when it's Christianity, if it's with the right heart, we're all right. But then things transition. People like power and they like money. And then you end up with the Spanish Inquisition. And then you end up, or you get another, you get a takeover from some Islamic regime. And then all of a sudden you've got that religion ruling and reigning in place. That's the problem. That's why freedom of religion and freedom of speech is the only way a system can properly exist. Freedom. We've got to have freedom. For this guy to criticize our nation is heinous. The problem is the left will embrace anybody who wants to join their team. There is no limit. They won't acknowledge abortion after a certain date is really worse than anything, and they won't acknowledge the life of a child in its mother's womb. They won't acknowledge, you know, the psychological impropriety of homosexuality. They won't acknowledge anything. They want to have been, you know, they want to act like they're neutral on all moral issues, but they're not. It says, you know, they're just filled with pompous arrogance. And it says in the Bible, having a form of arrogance, but denying the, any power thereof, or they want to act godly, superior, but they don't believe in the power of God. It's a sad, sad scenario. And so, you know, we've got to realize the value of the systems that we live in and the money that we've shipped all over the world. Obama has supported and sustained these nations at a sick level. We're on a runaway debt train, folks. You need to be in those items which are very firmly and unquestionably biblically attributed: gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones. I'm not telling you to go out and buy a bunch of head of cattle. The unique thing about precious metals-based assets is they're compact. They're money. They're liquid. They're anonymous. They're transportable. They're immediately recognizable. They've been from the beginning of written human history until now. They're innately, the desire's innately built into us. There was a study done in 92 with 10 sets of children, pairs between the ages of 3 and 5, where they put them in a room, acclimated one of them to the room, gave them all, you know, toys and candy or whatever, and then gave them a 1 ounce pure gold coin. They instantly took aggressive possession of it and wouldn't let it go while they did everything else. They brought another child into the room. They gave him the opportunity to become familiar with the surroundings, and then they introduced him to the coin, the pure, him or her, to the pure gold coin. And then they let the two children go. And in like 9 or 8 out of 10 cases, they went after each other for that coin in various forms. In 2 cases, I think they broke out in violence or they began to get physical with one another. In the other cases, the manipulation and focus remained on that item. And we've played with it with our infant grandchildren and everything. There is an absolute innate desire for gold God put in us for those kinds of valuables. You know, I have some Rolex watches. I have a 4-month-old grandson, and he sees that watch and he goes crazy for it. It's a quality piece. I don't know how they know. They know. We know. God told us. God taught us. He made us. And we can learn how not to care. And people have different personalities, and some care more than others and all that. I get it. But, and some people really become drones. They just become, boo, they don't even care. But that's not the vibrance and vivacity that God gave us as human beings. We desire quality and wealth, and we desire assets. That's why you are so easily drawn into cons and foolish investments, because a get-rich-quick scheme appeals to all of us. We all want success at some level, and whatever, however we measure that. It's just our nature. That's why socialism or Marxism is a philosophy that would never work with the humankind, period. We're manipulated with the consumer price index, where they tell us interest rates are 1%. They're not. The consumer's price index does not include food, transportation, real estate, or energy costs, period. The U.S. dollar has lost 99.5% of its spending power from 1913 till now. When I tell you the numbers that the Fed, the debt and deficit is, it's, you know, people are like, the dollar's dropped that much? You mean what you could buy with a dollar in 1913 takes 200 now? Yep. But that shouldn't shock you when you realize our deficits, $2.7 million, our unfunded liabilities, are $2.7 million for every taxpaying citizen. Our deficit alone is $360,000 or $80,000 or $340,000 for every taxpaying citizen. I mean, why would it surprise you that we've hyperinflated? That's the only way this system can survive, is through hyperinflation. The only item that gives you guaranteed value through inflation, war, you know, every form of tragedy and devastation you can imagine, is precious metals-based assets. Sure, you can own real estate, and then you end up with someone like Hugo Chavez who confiscates it all. Or you can have, you know, livestock. It dies. It's perishable. It's just a fact. You can grow crops. They're a ton of work, and they can die. You need hard assets, gold and silver, real estate. There's aspects of it that work. It's good to make an income on, but as far as just buying money, putting your money in it, parking it, it's tough, especially raw land. Precious metals-based assets are the only thing that have lasted timelessly throughout. They've made it through Nazi Germany. I mean, during the Great Depression and during Nazi Germany's reign, you know, coins set new record highs in auctions. You're like, how is that? I don't know. The wealth was transferred from the poor to the rich. I don't know, but it's a fact. You know, the hardest times in this country is when they've done the best. When markets were crashed in 08 and 09, rare coins were at record highs, peak levels. You go back to the inflation explosion of the late 80s, numismatic coins were through the roof. That's why we build balanced portfolios. People come in and they say they want this or that. They want this survival portfolio. They want it all for the worst day. They're not thinking about saving for the future. We don't know what God's timing is on any of this stuff. We've got to be good stewards. We've got to save as if we're going to be here a while. And we've got to also prepare. You know, it's basically prepare for the worst and pray for the best. If we surround our whole lives around death and mayhem and Armageddon, we are not enjoying the fruits of life that God gave us. We're not living life the right way. And you can't convert people to your faith by just saying, hey, man, you know, the world's coming to an end and everybody's going to die and things are, you know. I mean, you can go through the Bible. There's some pretty heavy stuff that happens in the end times. But that's there, I think, because God puts it in writing to prove he's God. So when it goes down, he'll say, see, I told you. I don't know. But the thing is, we've got a lot of responsibilities, and a lot of them have to do with having a really good attitude and being a really good steward with our finances. God, in the second chapter of Genesis, tells us about gold and where to get it. And he says he uses the word tov, T-O-W-B, the highest, most complimentary word in the Bible to describe it. And then we have the patriarchs, you know, swimming in wealth. God overly blessed them tremendously. Even Job, I mean, you know, God took care of him, and he used this exact form of wealth to bless him. You know, it's no coincidence that the very first thing given to Christ on earth was gold. There's no mystery there. It's the most valuable thing on earth. It's of value. It's tremendous. Quality products always last. And I'm telling you, I've been to international antique shows. I've seen Victorian vases and all kinds of stuff go for crazy stuff. And I have a level of comfort with it. But the problem is when you go sell that kind of stuff, you got to find the buyer. They're few and far between, and you get huge discounts. Even if you go to auction, the fees are extraordinary. It's not like that with numismatic and precious metals-based assets at all. They're immediately liquid. You can sell them within a couple percentage points of what you paid for them with, you know, right away after you buy them. I mean, within days or weeks. It's just the way they work. They're absolute liquid hard cash. We do 401ks and IRAs. We roll, you know, we can help you roll out of your IRA and just get the stuff in your hands, get off the grid, get rid of the 1099 game. You know, especially if you're over 59 and a half, you should be doing that anyway. As I've mentioned, we've done it with many family members, and they've done tremendously well. They've made gains 3, 4, 5 times their investment. They're off the grid. They're out of the system. It's theirs. They don't need anyone's permission to sell it. They don't need anyone's permission to remove it. They don't have to fill out a bunch of forms and fax them or whatever email to get money out of their 401k or IRA. There isn't a big paper trail there. It's freedom. That's why God made it. It's freedom. God would never create a system where your financial well-being was dependent on the faithfulness of another man. That's the problem. When you invest in any kind of stocks or bonds or paper or anything, you are betting on another person's ability to run profitably in, you know, a terrible market in a lot of ways. After they pay all their vendors and employees and all these other things, whatever is left at the end determines and dictates what small increase or decrease you are going to receive. That is not wise, folks. That is not a wise way to hold your money. It makes no sense. Christ said he entrusted himself to no man, for he knew what was on man's heart. And yet you take your finances and you go give them to some guy because he's nice, right? He's nice. And he says the right words, and you look at what he says, not what he does. What's your portfolio doing? I know what it's doing because I see people's every day, and it shocks me. And it shocks me that the market's supposedly going up and everybody's even or going down, and I'm like, what is going on here? I know what's going on. It's the great fleecing of wealth. It's the greatest grand financial delusion in the history of the world. They're confiscating your wealth. God made a system where that doesn't have to take place. And we can build a wonderful portfolio with whatever amount of money you have. I don't care if you have $5 or $500,000. We do it all. And believe me, we do. We've dealt with millions and we've dealt with $20. You know, it doesn't matter. Whatever you got, deal with it, preserve it, protect it. As one friend of mine says, the only part of your money that you should put into precious metals-based asset is the portion you can't afford to lose. Well, as a good steward, what portion can you afford to lose? And as a good steward, you should be preserving, protecting. When you buy these types of assets, there's no downside risk. You own firm, solid, tangible assets. They don't go away. You secure them, save them in a safe storage method. We happen to have the highest rated privately held depository service. I always say in the Northwest region, folks, it's far beyond that. How many buildings do you know that were built from the ground up specifically for this purpose? With, you know, the floors under our vaults are 5 feet thick of concrete and steel with rebar about every 5 inches. I mean, it's you can't even imagine. These vaults are, you know, feet thick of concrete and steel wrapped in 1 inch thick T1 tool resistant plate steel, heat sensors, seismic detectors, 24/7 motion surveillance that's recorded at multiple locations with hard wiring, you know, buried in that concrete I discussed. It's not wireless. I mean, it's, you know, I could go on and on. 800-pound bomb-proof doors, bullet and bomb-resistant polycarbonate for windows, walls made out of military-grade Kevlar, inch and three-eighths thick, you know, bomb-proof Kevlar. We built this place to protect your stuff. When we've had the big power out a while ago, I didn't even care. The power was down for a week. Didn't even care. Didn't bother me a bit because I knew no one could get in. People tried to, they got into every building up and down division around us. They broke in, but us, they couldn't get in. I'm not saying no one could, but I'm saying that we developed a hell of a facility. So you can preserve it well that way. It's pretty simple, folks. I mean, they've never lost their value or become worthless. They're timelessly valuable. They've maintained their spending power throughout all written human history. There's actually a shortage of precious metals beyond what you can imagine. That's why coins are good, too. They can't make more. And there's so many semi-numismatic coins that you can buy, you know, within the range of their precious metals content. They're rare and they're cool pieces of history. You know, there's things that you don't own precious metals, really. You're preserving them. I should say precious metals assets and coins. You're technically preserving them for the next generation. You don't buy stock and save it for the grandkids, because you and I both know in time that company will probably fold or go under or something will change. That's why you got to have your broker deceiving you, acting like he's shimmying in and out of all this stuff. Precious metals-based assets are universally recognized and accepted anytime, anywhere in the world, worldwide. They're private, anonymous, transportable, immediately liquid anywhere and anytime globally. It's like having compact real estate without a title deed to own it. Our money supply is going through the moon. The Federal Reserve System we live under is disastrous. Barack Obama ran us into the ground at a level you can't fathom. Just make the call. Coins Plus, 444-0044. That's Spokane. Toll free 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646. Or the website at coinsplus.com. Just do it, you know, folks. Just do it. I mean, it's that simple. I mean it. So thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. I'll be back Friday. Bye-bye.